The debate over business incentives is boiling over at the state capitol. Good Monday morning and live from Studio 5. This is First Coast Connect on 89.9. Thanks for listening. I'm Melissa Ross, and we are always live at 9. Also, never miss a show. Download the WJCT app and listen anytime. Or tune into the audio feed of this program right now live on our Facebook page. Just ahead, Jack's Chamberhead Daniel Davis steps into the studio and tells us where he stands on the debate over the future of Enterprise, Florida. We want your calls right now. 549-2937. Then later, First Coast Success speaks with Jody Brandenburg plus Culpepper on a crash-filled Daytona 500. All of that ahead. But first this hour, Governor Rick Scott and House Speaker Richard Corcoran have been at odds over the future of Enterprise Florida. That's the organization that provides business incentives to bring jobs here to the Sunshine State. Governor Scott is asking the legislature for $85 million to fund Enterprise Florida, saying that money is needed to continue increasing economic development. Now, he also wants $76 million to fund another organization, Visit Florida. But Corcoran wants to eliminate funding for both organizations, saying it's corporate welfare. It's led to some vocal exchanges, including the governor calling out lawmakers who agree with the House Speaker in their home districts. Now, here in Northeast Florida, the Jacksonville Chamber relies heavily on Enterprise Florida incentives to bring jobs to this community. And local business leaders say they'd like those incentives to continue. So we're going to begin the hour now with a look at the dust-up over Enterprise Florida and economic incentives as we welcome Jack's Chamber President and CEO Daniel Davis. Thanks for being here.
Good morning, Melissa.
And here's our question to callers. Where do you stand on incentives and this controversy over Enterprise Florida? Do you think the state should cut its funding or keep it? Give us a call. 549-2937. That's 549-2937. Or just email the show at firstcoastconnect@wjct.org. Weigh in on our Facebook page where we're already getting your comments. Send your tweets to @MelissaInJax. Daniel Davis, thanks for being here on short notice this Monday to talk about this. Certainly the House Speaker and Governor Scott don't see eye to eye on Enterprise Florida and how it should be funded. Where does the Jack's Chamber stand?
Well, first of all, I'd say that Governor Scott and Speaker Corcoran care about the state. They want to see more jobs. They have a difference of opinion, and we're working through that. The Chamber has been very successful along with partnering with the mayor's office on bringing new jobs to this community. We've had several stellar years of companies coming here. When they come here and bring thousands of jobs, it creates an economic impact all across the community. Doesn't matter how large or small your business is, we are creating jobs, and that's what's important here.
Enterprise Florida helped the Jack's USA partnership put together packages that have attracted companies to town like Amazon. So you see it as a net positive?
For everybody. In fact, we're working closely with folks in the Northwest community to help them be prepared whenever Amazon's hiring. So not just the folks from certain parts of town receive the jobs, but everybody can. When we do that, we cut crime, we improve the quality of life, we make Jacksonville a better place to live, and we see it as a big success and a bright future.
At the same time, some legislators, some of your former colleagues in the state legislature are on the other side of this. They think that Enterprise Florida and also Visit Florida, which has come under fire for an advertising campaign, an expensive one that featured the Miami hip-hop artist Pitbull, that they're being too lavishly funded. What's your response to your colleagues who differ on this issue in terms of state taxpayer dollars going to these agencies?
First of all, the mayor has certain priorities in place to make sure that there's return on investment and that there's very clear guidelines that we follow here in Northeast Florida. So I am not opposed to that at all. In fact, I encourage more visibility, more transparency, and we want to make sure that people produce the product first before they receive any dollars, any state-funded dollars. And I think that's an adequate thing to talk about.
Mm-hmm. And we'll go to your calls for a moment as Jack's Chamber CEO Daniel Davis joins us this Monday to talk about the flap in Tallahassee over Enterprise Florida. Where do you stand on funding economic incentives for Florida? It's 549-2937 to join us. And it looks as though a measure is moving in the House. It would slash funding for Visit Florida and abolish Enterprise, Florida, an amended bill. It would eliminate exemptions from the state's open records guarantee for Visit Florida, and it would cap agency salaries, for example, at $130,000 a year, allow legislative leaders to reject contracts worth more than $750,000. A lot of this has to do with Visit Florida, which is less of a concern to this morning's discussion. But what do you think about this legislation that's moving through the process? Do you think it'll continue to see changes, and how do you see that process unfolding?
Absolutely. As a former member of the legislature, bills get started in both houses, and they're not the same in many cases. That's why you have the checks and balance between the Senate and the House and the governor's office. So we look forward to this process. We think that there are adequate things being talked about. We do know how important incentives are, performance-based incentives are to this community, and we need to make sure that we let our legislature know.
And we talked about Amazon. What other big wins can the chamber point to in terms of job creation coming here that you think Enterprise Florida had a hand in?
Absolutely. And when you think about it, it's a partnership between the city of Jacksonville and the state of Florida. And when you bring high-paying jobs to this community, people are eligible to be able to receive a reimbursement back. But that's only a performance-based situation to where you don't get the money unless you bring the jobs. Mm-hmm. I'll give you an example. Deutsche Bank, back when I was on the city council, started off with 300 jobs that they brought here from New York City. They're over 2,000 now, and they're still continuing to grow. That's a huge economic impact for this community. You know, FNF, FIS, all of these great companies that we brought to town, they bring high-paying jobs. That affects everybody from the roofer to the pool guy to the people that landscape the yards around Jacksonville. So that's something we have to remember, the benefit that all those companies bring.
What would you say to critics of the incentive packages? And I'm sure we'll get at least one call calling them corporate welfare.
What I would tell you is absolutely we should set guidelines. We should set the ability for transparency. And we should set the ability for performance-based incentives to make sure if you don't do what you said you were going to do, you don't receive any taxpayer dollars. But the biggest thing I have to tell you is this. We have to compete with Georgia, North Carolina, Alabama, South Carolina, because they're not doing away with incentives. That's the biggest issue here. We're in a stiff competition with these states, and we need to win these jobs.
We're talking jobs on the show this morning with Jack's Chamber CEO, Daniel Davis. Have you heard about this fight in the state legislature between lawmakers and the governor over Enterprise Florida and how lavishly or not it should be funded? We want your calls on this right now at 549-2937. Now, the legislative session begins next week, and this debate will advance at that time, but we're going to talk about it right now. Let's begin with Mike in Arlington. Hi, Mike. Good morning. Thanks for calling.
Hi there. How are you doing?
Thanks
taking my call.
Sure.
Well, I got to say that I agree with the whole idea of incentives. I'm in the film production and video production world, and we've been long lamenting the lack of these sorts of things for the past couple of years since the money ran out and hasn't been renewed. And just to
you mean for film, you mean for Film Florida, right, Mike? For film production?
Correct. Correct.
Yeah.
It's not the same thing, but it's very similar. It's a very similar issue. And he's right that a lot of these jobs are going to Georgia and other areas. And as far as it being corporate welfare, I don't think, you know, it depends on how the money's distributed. If it's all going to large multi-billion dollar companies, okay, that's an adequate complaint. But if you're spreading the money around and these incentives are going to smaller companies to get people into the state, I think in general that's a good thing. But another thing that I think makes it look like corporate welfare is when you're doing things like cutting EPA funds and cutting things that are tangential to things like tourism and a more balanced approach. So it looks like corporate welfare when it's just when these advantages are just going to corporations and money isn't being spread around the state and to handle other needs. But that's just some of my observations. I'm interested in hearing comment on it.
Okay.
Thank you for taking my call again.
Thank you, Mike.
Topic.
Thanks, Mike.
And I thanks for the call. I appreciate it, and I think that it does make sense. We have to do away with writing a check up front and hoping that some companies would come to town. That that has been a problem in the past, and I think that it's adequate to clean that system up, and I think the governor and the legislature have done that over the past several years. And this is what I would tell you. When we bring a large corporation here bringing thousands of jobs, GE out on the west side, you drive by there and look and see hundreds of vehicles parked in that parking space. Those are all jobs putting food on the table for people. We competed directly with the states around us and won because we have a great workforce. We've got a great story to tell. And I think as long as we can play on this level playing field, we'll be able to win those jobs left and right.
We've got a call from your old stomping grounds, it looks like. City Councilman Jim Love is on the line. Councilman Love, thanks for calling in this morning.
It's my pleasure. Thank you, Melissa. I'd just like to say that Daniel Davis has got it exactly right. We can't play the game with one hand tied behind our back against Georgia and Alabama and South Carolina. We have to have these incentives, but they have to be spent correctly in order to bring those jobs here. We may spend a little bit of money, but these corporations will bring us millions of tax dollars. And so it's important that we get in the game. And I can't believe these legislators in Tallahassee are thinking about eliminating Enterprise Florida. It's just a crazy idea.
Thanks, Councilman. Thanks for calling in.
Councilman, thanks for taking it easy on me this morning.
he doesn't always do that.
Yeah.
thanks for the call.
I agree with him. The mayor and the city council have put stiff guidelines in place to make sure that they protect any taxpayer dollars that are spent. And I think that's one thing that we have a great story to tell. There have been mistakes around the state before that I don't think anybody can say are okay. But clearly in Jacksonville and in Northeast Florida, we've done it right, and we've got a great story.
Here's a tweet for you from Jay. Enterprise Florida should be reformed, but we have to promote. Even Coke still advertises and they're world famous. So your argument is, let's not eliminate this. Let's just do a better job of it. Do you think your former colleagues in Tallahassee will eventually see it your way?
Listen, some of my dearest friends are opposed to this, and I believe it's our duty to communicate our position. And if you have adequate thoughts and arguments, hopefully you win folks over. And so this process, once again, hasn't even started yet. It's at the beginning. Session is a crazy time where people are negotiating all sorts of bills, and we have to work it through that gauntlet, and hopefully we'll come out on top with a good product at the end of the day where we can still market our great state, we can still bring tourists here, we can still do what's great to create quality of life in Northeast Florida, and I believe we can do it.
It's your chance to connect with Jack's Chamber CEO Daniel Davis. The lines are jammed as we talk about the fight in Tallahassee over how to fund Enterprise Florida. They are the outfit that provides economic incentives to bring jobs here to the Sunshine State. Let's go to Bill in Fleming Island now. Hi, Bill. Good morning.
Hey, good morning. My name is Bill Garrison. I manage Clay County's local economic development organization, and we work closely with Enterprise Florida. And I just want to make the point that a large part of what Enterprise Florida does has nothing to do with incentives. I know of a project that recently landed up in Jacksonville. It's under the codename Project Soccer. It's a plastics recycling company. It's a Brazilian company that decided they wanted to move into the southeastern U.S. initially, and then they chose Jacksonville. Enterprise Florida was actively involved in helping them make that decision and did not spend $1 of incentive money on it. So I just want to make sure that everybody understands the incentive portion of what Enterprise Florida does is a relatively small part of what they do. When an international company calls, somebody needs to be there to answer the phone and say, how can we help you and what can we do to help you choose Jacksonville?
All right. Thank you, Bill. That's Bill calling from Clay County. Thanks for that call.
And I would tell you, Bill does a great job promoting Clay County and is a great partner with the Jack's Chamber.
Dean on the South Side. Hi, Dean. Good morning.
Hi, good morning. I just wanted to state, you know, I have the job that I have at a local financial services company because of, you know, things like this. They chose Jacksonville to expand in and you know, pay me higher than my other financial service wage job was paying me. You know, it's definitely a good thing. I just wanted to say maybe you could point out things that are written into these deals, like how they have to actually create jobs here and not bring in employees from other states, you know, how it actually does create jobs here. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks, Gene.
I think that's a great point. And we are quickly growing in the financial services area. We have so many areas of growth, but we are seen as having a great workforce, attractive to folks that are looking to reduce some of the costs that you would have in a New York or a London, and move to a city like Jacksonville, where you can actually, you know, surf before you come to work. The quality of life is absolutely incredible, and mm-hmm. and folks are moving more and more to places like Jacksonville to be able to fulfill that quality of life and have a great job. So we have a great story to tell.
Lots of comments meanwhile for you on our First Coast Connect Facebook page. Here's one. Wouldn't there be an argument that the money we spend for Enterprise Florida and the tax breaks we give corporations would be better invested in education and infrastructure? A well-educated workforce and updated infrastructure would also be huge incentives for a company. What about that?
Look, there is no doubt that investing in workforce is absolutely critical. In fact, I would say that's probably the most important thing that we have to be able to produce a product in today's age. But we still have to compete. And when you have the legislature in North Carolina and Georgia doling out millions and millions of dollars, we may not be able to produce as much money, some straight cash that those states can produce. But we have a great quality of life. We have low taxes. We have an unbelievable workforce, and whenever we can have some incentives as well, then we can compete, and usually we can win. So it's more about competition with our surrounding states. If they all did away with incentives, which they're not going to do, mm-hmm. then I can understand moving in that direction.
Let's go now to David on the South Side. Hi, David. How are you?
Oh, I'm fine. I would just like to mention the biggest source of corporate welfare has been these tax cuts over the 4 or 6 years. The biggest job creator we have are teachers. We need to invest there. And I wish if we had a discussion like this over tax cuts, because corporate welfare through the bringing companies in is insignificant to the past tax cuts. A teacher is a good business person. Managing 140 people with different levels that they need to uptake and learn, we need to invest in the best teachers and watch out for these tax cuts that never get discussed in detail like this. If we hadn't had all the tax cuts in the past 4 or 6 years, you know, we wouldn't be having this discussion, because we would be protecting the environment, giving a good education, wouldn't worry about the water quality in the river. If you added up all that money in the past 8 years, how much money would that be to invest in the Florida and Florida environment and citizens that need it?
All right, David, thanks for that.
And I would say that what a stellar resource we have in our teachers. They are creating the future workforce. I have to tell you, we see some other rural areas in other states doling out tons of cash and then not being able to fill the jobs that they promised to fulfill because the workforce isn't there. That's the benefit that we have in Northeast Florida. We can create a workforce, and we have to keep investing in these kids as they're coming up to be prepared to fill those jobs that we bring.
Do you think we're adequately funding that sector?
We always have room to grow and to be more focused on skills that the jobs are wanting to come and to be placed. So I think we can always look at that. I think that if we move towards incentive-based workforce development, that's incredible too. And I think companies want that. So I think this process will work out. I think that we have to continue the discussion, and I look forward to it.
And if you're just tuning in, we're speaking right now with Jack's Chamber CEO Daniel Davis. You might have read a Florida House budget panel this week voted to kill Enterprise Florida. That's the state's economic development agency. They also voted to reduce state funding for Visit Florida, the state's tourism bureau. This may not be set in stone, though, as the legislative session will get going next week, and things could always change, as Daniel pointed out. But let's take a few more calls for him. Peter is in Arlington. Hi, Peter. Thanks for holding. Good morning to you.
Good morning. I just want to mention the Mr. Davis mentioned that it takes credit for bringing a lot of jobs to Jacksonville. And I think a previous caller tried to get him to mention numbers, and he mentioned PG&E. And I know for a fact that PG&E brought at least 500 jobs from out of town, and they were only looking to hire maybe 10% less, you know, how much power do they really have when they're negotiating to say, no, you need to hire 25%? And another thing about incentives, there's federal programs to help train workers, and I noticed that the state pulled out of it, and the city of Jacks provides nothing. If more workers were trained in Jacksonville, maybe we would have a better chance of getting these jobs. So I think that needs to be addressed. Thank you.
Lots of feedback coming in this morning. Yeah. People are following this.
It's a great discussion.
Yeah.
And you know, each deal that you do with a company that's coming to town, they have different needs. And so it's going to be on a case-by-case basis. Not everyone is going to bring 75% jobs relocating. And many times people will hire 75% of the jobs locally. So I think there's a lot of opportunity there. I can tell you, when Amazon comes to town, they are going to hire thousands of Jacksonvillians and folks from Northeast Florida to fill those jobs. That is positive. That is great for our community. So hopefully we can continue to fight to bring companies like that to this town.
Dave on the South Side. Go ahead, Dave. Thanks for holding and happy Monday.
Hey, another great show on a great topic that kind of gets down to what is the fundamental role of government in a capitalist economy. And we've got, Adam Smith said that the role of government, the sovereign, is to protect the commons from exploitation by the mercantilists. And this kind of gets into the corporate welfare argument, but it also gets into the environmental argument and the infrastructure and education argument. Where do you get the best return on your investment of public monies? And I reject the concept that the government should be promoting competition between Florida, Georgia, for example, if you're ignoring the externalities like the environmental cost of dredging Savannah River, dredging the St. John's Rivers, just to promote the import of more cheap stuff from China. You know, the whole problem with the way Florida manages this stuff, we're not investing in research and development that eliminates the risk that normal business practices don't take on, like our peer states in New York and California, where they invest heavily in research and development at the state level. We're just cherry-picking headquarter jobs, and we've got a great climate here, a great environment, and those jobs are going to come here because people want to live here. And I'm not sure we have to basically engage in a race to the bottom by selling off our environment to the lowest cost bidder just to produce a few jobs. You know, all jobs aren't created equal. You've got Amazon coming here, that at the same time you've got retail stores that are going out of business because they can't compete with Amazon. Should government be in the business of trying to mediate between big box retailers like Amazon and retail stores like JCPenney that are shutting down their retail outlets? Should we be in the middle of that debate? I don't know. These are complicated issues. But Enterprise Florida has missed the mark on that, and I think you need to refocus what Enterprise Florida is actually trying to do and provide more information and support on the infrastructure side and less direct subsidies of just trying to cherry-pick people to bring here because we got to compete with Georgia or North
Carolina. Thanks for that. Thanks for that call. Okay.
I would say, listen, I can't imagine anybody in Northeast Florida who doesn't want to make sure that we protect the beautiful environment that we have. I mean, that's what's attractive to folks when we show them our community. So I'm all for that. I think there's a balanced approach to that. And the chamber is going to do everything we can to have that balanced approach as we talk about economics and the environment.
I would
just say this. Transparency is important and it's good. And so I think that's what the discussion is probably going to revolve around in Tallahassee. And I think that makes the whole process better, the more transparent you are.
If they kill Enterprise Florida, how does that affect your job as head of the local Chamber of Commerce?
Listen, I think we will still be successful. Like I said earlier, we have a great community with a that's growing. That Jacksonville is an emerging city that I don't think any of us are going to recognize in 5 years because of so much opportunity and transformation that's going to take place. So we'll keep fighting that fight. We just want to be able to compete on a level playing field, and that's what this discussion's about.
Well, we thank you for sharing your thoughts with us. Very timely. Thanks for giving us some time.
It's always fun to be here. Thanks, Melissa.
Daniel Davis is the president and CEO of the Jacks Chamber. And much more still ahead later, Culpepper with a look at this weekend's crash-filled Daytona 500. But up next, First Coast Success speaks to Jody Brandenburg. That's in a moment.
Hendricks Avenue Baptist Church is a place to experience Christ's presence and God's Spirit in a vibrant faith community. HAB celebrates diversity, seeks to bridge differences, and journeys together in an honest and authentic search for truth. HABchurch.com. Find a different way of being Baptist.
The day-long program, Laboring in the Fields of the Lord, at Southwestern State College in Fort Myers, looks at Southeastern Indians and Spanish missions. I'm Ben Brotmarkle, and coming up on Florida Frontiers, the weekly radio magazine of the Florida Historical Society, we'll talk with archaeologist Gerald T. Milanich. We'll discuss the history of birding in Florida and research in Hannibal Square. That's Florida Frontiers, Monday evening at 6:30 on 89.9 WJCT.
Calling all artists, WJCT is celebrating 45 years on the radio, and we need your help to design the perfect anniversary t-shirt. Design should reflect what WJCT means to you or the First Coast community. The winning design will be featured on a limited edition t-shirt during our spring pledge drive. Get started now at wjct.org/45 years. Take a drive with us into the Blues Horizon, the best in classic and modern blues, as part of WJCT's After Hours, tonight at 11 on 89.9 WJCT, your community, your world, your music.
Welcome back. Well, he's president of Hartage Giddens Funeral Homes and Cemeteries. In today's First Coast Success, Karen Bruni Mathis of the Financial News and Daily Record speaks with Jody Brandenburg.
Jody Brandenburg is a Jacksonville leader who many people know through his community service, but who most people encounter at the end of a life. Brandenburg is the president of Hartage Giddens Funeral Homes and Cemeteries. That comprises 11 funeral establishments, 6 cemeteries, and a cremation facility. Brandenburg has been a community leader in the Jacksonville death care industry for almost 30 years and joined the profession more than 50 years ago. Jody Brandenburg, thank you for sharing your story with First Coast Success.
My honor, Karen. Thank you.
Well, you became president of Hartage Giddens in Jacksonville in 1990, and during the past 3 decades, you undoubtedly have met with thousands of area families during their saddest hours. How do you train yourself and your team to professionally approach each situation?
Well, we have a rigorous course of indoctrination after hire, and through our affiliation with the Dignity Memorial Network, we have Dignity University. And Dignity University provides us with the ability to have the employees train on required courses and also elective courses. And they may advance their careers through Dignity University and the training that's involved there. So we're so fortunate to have in-house opportunities to do our training.
As the leader, obviously they learn from you as well. What do you personally teach your staff?
The first thing we look for is the ability to communicate. And that is such an important part of what we do every day. Now, communications is not just the ability to talk. Communications is a two-way street. So their ability to listen, and oftentimes that's the keynote when dealing with families that are, we're working with them oftentimes on their saddest days, and we have to have the ability to listen and then determine from listening to them what suits them best and how we can best serve their needs.
You were born in South Florida. Did you grow up there?
Well, now everybody knows Miami. Most people know Homestead, Florida. Some people know Florida City, Florida. So you're getting way down south. Now, if you go below Florida City, you're almost into the Everglades. I grew up in the last house before Everglades National Park, and I grew up in Paradise. My dad was a tomato farmer and farmed tomatoes down that way. And as an 18-year-old, he came down there and built our house in 1926. And that house existed until Andrew came through and swept it away in, what was, 92. But we were raised in an agricultural environment. Close family, two older brothers, who, by the way, both went into agriculture and followed in the family footsteps in agriculture.
What did you want to be when you grew up?
Oh, my. What I really wanted to be was a pharmacist.
Really?
I had an older cousin who owned independent drugstores in the greater Homestead area. And I worked there a lot. I worked there after school, weekends, and really was indoctrinated into pharmacy. And that was my plan, was to go to school and be a pharmacist.
But that plan changed.
That plan changed after the first year of college. I was talking to a friend of mine that I grew up with, and I said, in order for me to continue on to college next year, I have to find a job this summer and put some funds together to go back to school. And he says, well, I'm working for a funeral home in Miami, and we have a perfect opportunity to you. We even have dorms. Back then, they had ambulance service, and so you stayed around the clock at the location. So I got a job washing the cars, mowing the lawn, and just being a jack of all trades around the funeral home, and really got an opportunity to see what it was all about. And since then, I've done nothing else except for a short time while I was in college in Dallas. I worked for Ford Motor Company, and that was a great job for a youngster in college. It was a terrific job working for Ford.
Well, Jody Brandenburg, thank you for joining First Coast Success.
Thank you, Karen. Glad to be with you.
And read a partial transcript of Karen's talk with Jody Brandenburg in today's Daily Record. We'll be right back.
On the next 1A, President Trump has revoked federal guidelines specifying that transgender students have the right to use public school restrooms that match their gender identity. That's upset many, including some prominent Republicans.
This is a disaster, and you can still fix it.
The stakes have now been raised for an upcoming Supreme Court case. That's next time on 1A.
Weekdays at 10 after First Coast Connect on 89.9 WJCT.
Indivisible is a live national conversation about America in a time of change.
I just hope that for our president, he can gain an appreciation that, you know, the troops are not really meant to be a prop.
I have a son who's in the Marines now, and I'm nervous.
I'm Kai Wright. Tune in or call in. Join us Monday through Thursday for the first 100 days of the new presidency. There's a seat at this table for everyone.
On WJCT's radio reading service at 8 a.m. weekday mornings, it's 3 hours of news, op-eds, and obituaries from your local newspaper. Here's a call we received from someone who listens online.
I'm very happy to tell you that my daughter found the app for the radio reading service on my tablet, and I'm using that, and it's excellent. I enjoy all the programs.
If you're living with blindness and want to hear what's in the paper, go to wjct.org/radio reading, underwritten by Florida Eye Specialists.
All your favorite oldies tonight at 10 on Route 66, only on 89.9 FM.
Welcome back. Well, it's a new video series on Northeast Florida's most special places, our state, national, and city parks. And the purpose is to share the importance and value of our public lands, especially during the upcoming state legislative session. You can check these videos out at a special event coming up later in the week. We've got a preview right now as we welcome Sean LaHave, the project leader and producer of the video series. Good morning.
Morning. How are you?
Good. John November from the Public Trust Environmental Legal Institute of Florida.
Hello.
And Maria Mark, who's program coordinator with the Environmental Leadership Program at UNF's Environmental Center. Good morning.
Good morning.
And we'll talk about the event in a moment, but first, Sean LaHave, tell us about this video series and what it's all about.
So, my name is Sean LaHave. I'm a project leader in the Environmental Leadership Program at the UNF Environmental Center. So over the span of 2016, I set out with the Public Trust Environmental Legal Institute of Florida to film 20 episodes on the city, state, and national parks of Duval County, Florida, and I highlighted the ecology, history, and natural beauty found in each park.
And this series is called Discovering Northeast Florida's Special Places. We have the largest urban park system in the country.
Correct.
We don't always celebrate it, though, so this is a way to do that.
Yes. Yeah. So part of the goal of the series is to energize the citizens of Jacksonville and tourists alike to get out and explore these parks for themselves. They're right in our backyard. They're absolutely stunning, and I hope that the message gets across.
John November with the Public Trust Environmental Legal Institute of Florida. You're sponsoring this effort. Why do you think this is so important to use these videos to get this message out?
Well, the public trust mission is to protect these special places, and people, if they don't get out to use them and feel them and see them, it makes it much more difficult to be an effective coalition.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and also support maintaining and preserving them. Maria Mark, you're going to further the work of the video by having an event later this week, sort of a debut for this series. What's going to be happening?
Well, the event is going to be at the Intuition Ale Work, which is just down the street. We'll have networking from about 5:30 to 6:30, and then we'll start with the program around 6:30. We'll have samplings of the videos that Sean just spoke of. We'll have some of the representatives from each of the parks, as well as President Delaney will say a few words.
The now retiring UNF President John Delaney, as
yes.
We've just learned. But he played a large role in furthering our park system, so I'm sure he'll have a lot to say.
Yes, President Delaney was the architect of why we have the largest urban park system in the United States. Through Preservation Project Jacksonville, that was one of the most aggressive land acquisition programs in Northeast Florida, and he doubled basically what we had as far as an existing park system.
Now, you've been part of the ELP, the Environmental Leadership Program, Sean, as a way to, this is an incubator for the next generation of environmental leadership in Florida.
Yes.
This video series is coming out just as the legislative session gets underway and they look at issues like funding for Amendment 1. That's something voters overwhelmingly approved. The state's voters want to keep these special places preserved, but the funding fight isn't over on that.
Yeah, so I hope that these videos do energize not only people to go out and explore the parks, but I hope it energizes voters to protect the parks through legislation, such as Amendment 1 with solar. And with the work that John November is doing over at the Public Trust, I think there's a good fight ahead. And I'd love for him to share more about that.
Yeah, and I misspoke. I was thinking of the other amendment, not the solar amendment, but John November. What do you see as the most, I don't know, the most pressing threats to our parkland right now?
I think you really touched on it with the threats to, we allocated funds to purchase parkland, and they're using it for staff funding. And it's so important that we get people out into the parkland and build that coalition that will allow our legislators to know that this is a key issue. Numbers matter so much. Contacting your legislators and saying, hey, we got to keep this land protected and we got to get more land protected in the future.
So you want everyone to come out to this event. And who wouldn't want to come out to Intuition Ale Works anyway?
Absolutely. Right? Absolutely. And they've got a great venue now with their new location. We'll be actually in the room where they have where they're brewing their beer. And so it should be a lot of fun, a lot of interaction. We'll also have a silent auction. So bring money. We'll have some great prizes, including some of Sean's photography that he's taken throughout his career as a photographer. But I just want to kind of add on to the Amendment 1. The importance of these lands is not just recreation, but it also saves us tax dollars because of the ecosystem services that they provide. You know, cleaning, you know, naturally cleaning water, naturally cleaning air, protecting us from storm surge and flooding and that sort of thing. And those are kind of the benefits that they give back to us that we really don't necessarily value all the time. It's not in our face. And so it's not that we're just trying to protect these lands for recreation. It's about survival. It's about us, too. So,
and in addition to the party Thursday night, Visit Jacksonville and WJCT may air these videos at some point. So your work will be seen by an even bigger audience. That's pretty cool.
We're definitely looking forward to that. And the anticipated release will be a 20-week series over the summer. So definitely stay tuned for more.
All right. And in the meantime, come on out to Intuition Ale Works Thursday night to check out Discovering Northeast Florida's Special Places, the new video series. Thanks so much, Sean LaHave, John November, and Maria Mark. Thanks for sharing this with us.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Culpepper's up next with a look at the crash-filled Daytona 500. That's after this.
There are a million things that are not supposed to happen. Anvils are not supposed to fall from the sky. You're not supposed to find the secret plans in the laundry basket. But what if the stuff that's not supposed to happen happens? The next Snap Judgment, one in a million. Snap Judgment, storytelling with a beat. Do not miss it.
Sundays at 1 on 89.9 WJCT.
It's a new administration's first 100 days, and the news is flying fast.
Protesters arrived here.
Keystone XL pipeline.
The Affordable Care Act.
New refugee
Obamacare.
Admissions for
all things considered, will be here to help you make sense of it all. Listen every day.
Jazz, the Great American Songbook, and your favorite oldies on Relax Radio at midnight, only on 89.9 FM. Your community, your world.
I'm Vince Kong, host of Redux, WJCT's weekly news magazine and the news podcast of the First Coast. Tune in to catch up on the latest local stories, plus music from our after-hours programming, anytime, anywhere. Subscribe to WJCT Redux now on your favorite podcast app.
Welcome back. Well, finally this hour, a new format at Daytona leads to exciting racing, but plenty of wrecks.
I'm a pepper, he's a pepper, she's a pepper, we're a pepper. Wouldn't you like to be a pepper too?
The great Cole Pepper is here now with more on a crash-filled Daytona and the rest of the weekend sports news and notes. Hey, good morning.
Good morning, Melissa. Yeah, you know, one of the things that not only Daytona, but the entire NASCAR world has been trying to handle is trying to turn around flagging TV ratings and attendance. Yeah. Now, obviously, some of this has been impacted by the economy over the last, seven, 8 years. Mm-hmm. However, one of the things they have tried to do, they have implemented, starting with Daytona this past weekend, is setting up stages within the race that have points associated with it toward the championship. If you're a cycling fan, you're very familiar with this kind of approach for the Tour de France and some of the other big races. But it's a new thing for the most part in motorsports, and it really created two different moments of senses of urgency within those races that created some drama and led to some trading of paint, as they say at Daytona.
Yes.
And in the end, you had some of the biggest names in the race getting wiped out from some wrecks that ordinarily you might not have seen. There have been years at Daytona where it's been largely without incident until right at the end, not the case this time around. So you had Dale Earnhardt Jr. and Jimmy Johnson and Danica Patrick and other big names getting wiped out in these races, in these wrecks. And in the end, it was Kurt Busch who won the Daytona 500, his first win at the 500, a big win for him, an emotional moment for his race team. And they got the victory. Just about everybody else had damage on their car and or didn't finish because of some of the wrecks that happened.
Wow. Well, and did the did it pay off in better ratings this time?
We'll see in the, as the ratings come in, but it certainly did seem like it held the attention of a lot of people a little bit more than it had in the past. A lot of times, unless you're a hardcore race fan, you might tune in for the start, see some of the pageantry, then run some errands, do what you have to, take
it's
the kids
so long,
to soccer, whatever. Then come back and watch the end, and you could kind of get a feel for that. Now, there are some moments you really have to stay tuned for. It's 60 and 120 laps in there because there's something that might be happening that could impact the larger season.
All right. Now, let's turn our attention to a big local rivalry, which I know is fun for you to talk about. Tonight, it's UNF versus JU.
And for the third time this year, they'll play. This time, it's in the ASUN basketball tournament. And this was all set up by UNF beating JU last week on Thursday night. Eight straight wins for UNF in this series, and UNF's Dallas Moore got a lot of attention as well. He wins the ASUN Player of the Year for the second straight year. He is really the guy to watch. He led the league in scoring. He's one of the all-time scorers in Atlantic Sun Conference history. And if JU is going to do it, they're going to have to snap that eight-game losing streak to UNF. The Ospreys, the third seed, JU, the sixth seed in the tournament, and they play the first round of the conference tournament games on campus, so it's a home court advantage for UNF tonight.
On the UNF campus tonight. That'll be a loud crowd, I'm sure.
Should be. I think there'll be a lot of excitement and interest for that one.
Okay, let's talk about the Jaguars. Of course, it's the off season, but Tom Coughlin's been much in the headlines, not surprising. As they head to the scouting combine this week, what can we expect?
Well, you know, this is the first time that the Jaguars will be going with Coughlin as this role, the vice president of football operations. He is already putting his stamp on this team in terms of some of the players that have been let go and others that, you know, there's been talk of trades that will come final here in a couple of weeks. But it's interesting because you can really see that the way that this team is going to be put together is going to be very much with Tom's thumbprint on this team. Mm-hmm. And some of the comments he made at a press conference on Friday really indicate that, talking about wanting the team to be tougher. When he talked about players like Paul Posluszny, you could just tell that's a Tom Coughlin kind of player. Not at all a shock for those of us who have covered this team with Posluszny's professional approach and knowing what Coughlin wants out of a player. You know the kind of players that he wants, and I think you're going to see more of those. It's not that Gus Bradley or Dave Caldwell, who's still, of course, with the team, wanted something drastically different, but how they identify those traits is really going to be a big part of this. Mm-hmm. And you know Coughlin wants big, tough guys. It seems simple, and you'd say, well, aren't all football players big, tough
no,
guys?
Exactly.
But those are the kind of players that Coughlin really wants. So as they go to the scouting combine in Indianapolis this week, it's going to be interesting to see what kind of comments we hear out of Dave Caldwell and also out of Doug Marrone, the head coach, as it relates to some of the players that they see. You won't hear them giving away too much. One of the things that Coughlin has always said and prided himself on is not giving away a lot of information. I think in Gus Bradley and before that with Jack Del Rio, to a certain extent with Mike Mularkey in between, there was a willingness to give some information out to the media.
Not anymore.
I don't think that's going to happen anymore. You're likely to have more leaks coming out of the White House than out of Everbank Field.
Do you think Coughlin's style, it's almost sort of a head fake in terms of, you know, he's seen as this legendary figure. Do you think that'll give the players and the coaching staff more swagger, more confidence as they head into the season?
Well, I think the biggest difference you're going to see this year, and we'll see what kind of an impact this has, is that under Gus Bradley, he was trying to remove distractions and take pressure off of players. That is 180 degrees diametrically opposed to what Coughlin wants, which is wants everybody to be on edge and looking over their shoulder to say, all right, am I doing everything right? Really attention to detail and know that there's an outside force, meaning Coughlin and the coaches, that will be putting that pressure on. Gus Bradley wanted internal pressure. He wanted each individual player to develop that, and he wanted the leaders on the team to really police the team. That policing is going to come from the top down now with Coughlin, as it did in the early years with the Jaguars. And when you think about some of the players who had their, you know, really put the stamp on the Jaguars in the golden years for this Jaguars team, they were guys who were not only internally motivated themselves, but also really responded to the kind of approach Coughlin wanted them to take. And, you know, Tony Boselli is the easiest example to pick out. Here was an outstanding player, great talent, but he also responded and realized, okay, yeah, Tom wanted me to put this, behave in this particular way. Not everybody comes into the league with that kind of attitude. Fred Taylor had to learn it. Taylor always thought that Coughlin was trying to kill him in one way or another. And when he finally got it, he had the best years of his career.
Always good to talk to you. Thanks for being here.
Thanks, Melissa.
Follow Cole on Twitter at Cole Pepper. Listen to the Sam and Cole podcast for more sports news and notes. And that's our show. Thanks to all of our guests and callers. Our producer is Kevin Murchart. Michelle Corum runs our board. The show theme is composed and performed by the Jacksonville Symphony's Pyotr Chevchik. Never miss a show. Download the WJCT app and listen anytime. Next on 1A, Beyond Bathrooms, the battle over transgender rights. I'm Melissa Ross, and you're listening to First Coast Connect on 89.9 WJCT-FM Jacksonville. Your community, your world. We'll be right back here again tomorrow at 9 a.m. Have a great day.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.